My name is Pussy Galore.
I must be dreaming.
Podcast episode 416. The League versus Sean Connery. I'm Matt Durson.
And I'm Hunt. Sean Hunt.
Dr. Clay Inferno.
All right. Very well. Welcome back. Before we get to the fun stuff.
There wasn't a lot of applause there. I gotta send that joke back out to the writer's room.
Yeah, I know. That's kind
of. Best of times. It was the blurst of times.
The blurst.
We have the best writers on their show. The best, to tell you.
Yeah. Anyways, even though we're having a few yucks, I do want to say I'm going to pour one out, and I don't mean this like frivolously, but pour it.
Hail to the king.
We're all Marvel guys. Chadwick Boseman passed away. Obviously, best known for the Black Panther, but obviously all his other film roles. Well,
Jackie Robinson, 42, James Brown, yeah. Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah, it's very sad, very sad. And I know, John, obviously, you sort of have a personal colon cancer. We all do.
Yes. That is personally affected my family, the cancer. Yeah. Particular cancer. Other cancers as well. I mean, we've got a whole smorgasbord of cancer in my family. So.
Yeah. That's
all around. Three. All around.
That's really a horrible thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so.
Well, anyways, it's sad. He was a tremendous actor, and I can't believe he had it for 4 years, they said. So he knew about when he was making all these Avengers movies and stuff. Can you believe that? He got in like Black Panther shape to do, and wow. I mean,
that means that he knew that it was like important that he do the art, that he do the work. You know, that he do that and shine ever so brightly on his brief stint here. I mean, he's younger than all of us.
Combined.
he was closer to us. He was only a year younger than me, actually. Not even like months younger than I was, but I am. But he got in a lot better shape than I possibly ever could. So, but
he's super awesome.
He was super awesome. So anyways, thank you, Chadwick.
Wakanda forever.
Yeah, Wakanda forever. All right. Well, we're going to move on to another tremendous actor, I guess. Not to be, moving on. But we are a man who turned 90 a few days ago, about a week ago, as we record this. Sir Thomas Sean Connery.
Well, you think about it, though. It's a good transition because, you know, you could see Chadwick Boseman take on a role where he was James Bond. You know what I mean? Like, he still had so much potential, you know, in him to be, like, a great, great actor. And he's still, like, very, very
The first
very
half of Black Panther made me think of, like, it was sort of a James Bond-esque movie with the car chases.
Car chase. Yeah. They did some really cool stuff in there. Yeah, so we're going to mostly talk about his career as James Bond. Obviously, he did other things. But I think that's his, if you don't, they're linked. The two characters, you know, Sean Connery, the characters, the two things are linked forever, at least in our generation. Maybe people who are growing up now think of Daniel Craig as James Bond. Maybe not. I don't know. But at least for us, it was Sean Connery was number one. And everybody else was kind of like, okay, well, you're good too when it came to James Bond. So we're going to mostly focus
that. Would you both say that he's your favorite Bond?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
I think in terms of, like, since he established the character in that sense, I think he was the best because he had sort of the best movies. Although, I mean,
best versus favorite or whatever, however you want to rank it.
It's sort of like how I know that, like, Empire Strikes Back is the best Star Wars movie, but I still tend to watch Revenge of the Sith more.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, I like Roger Moore too. You know, I like... think
Sean Connery is the best. Like, he had the best run for Bond movies, but I kind of really like did. Pierce Brosnan the best. But he could have sort of got shafted with some shitty scripts, you know?
Yeah.
That's true. But those were the kind of scripts we were eating up at the time. It was the style at the time.
Yes.
Which was the style at the time. Yeah. And I mean, Daniel Craig is having a great run. And whatever,
yeah, and he's
too.
Great.
I mean, you have to, it's like Michael Keaton as Batman or anything, you know, like Sean Connery was the first one, and everyone will henceforth be compared to him.
I think Goldfinger is just one of the most memorable things from my childhood when I saw that on TV. I thought someone really did get covered in gold and died. Like, I didn't, I was so young that
method acting.
I thought that was like a real thing, because I was just so, it was just so colorful, and like all the stuff I saw from James Bond. I have James Bond memories like I have Star Wars memories. It was always on TV.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I first got into the Bond films back in 85 when View to a Kill came out. So we used to go up to the video store, the one that Durst and I eventually worked at, and they had all the Bond films. And I went through all the Roger Moore ones first, because that was the Bond I knew. And then I went further back into the Connery ones. But Goldfinger, I think, is my favorite Bond film.
Wasn't that at one point, like, as far as if you adjusted for inflation, that was like one of the highest grossing movies?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, that and like Thunderball, I think, right, made more than Goldfinger. And it was like the highest grossing Bond, if you adjusted for inflation, up until Skyfall.
Yeah. All right.
But first, like Goldfinger is the one that kicked off like the whole Bond mania.
Like Beatles mania.
Yeah. Just like it says in Goldfinger, he's like, that's as bad as listening to the Beatles without earmuffs.
All right. So I there's a few things I want to talk about before his, not we don't have to get too much into his early life, but I like the fact that his nickname as a teenager was Big Tam.
Wow.
So he was, yeah, and apparently he claims to have lost his virginity at 14.
Good man. That's like God. That's like 15 years before you, Durst.
At least.
And what, there's that bar. There's that bar downtown called the Tam. Does that mean something in like Scottish or something?
If it's not Scottish, it's crap.
Yeah, but Big Tam losing his virginity at 14. I mean, he must have been big, huh? Eh? Okay.
Let's 16, look under the kilt.
At 16, he joined the Navy, the Royal Navy in Scotland. 18, he started bodybuilding, and he became like all buff. Yeah.
He was like a Mr. Universe.
This guy had quite a life before he was James Bond. And he started in theater, a lot of minor roles. And I remember you used to always tell me in that video store that we worked at, about Darby O'Gill and the Little People, because we had that on the shelf in the Disney section.
That's the flick that got him the role. And that movie itself is sort of like a marvel of forced perspective, matte paintings, like all done in camera effects.
Matte painting.
Yeah, like matte painting.
My paintings.
But if you ever watch the movie, don't recommend watching it because I don't like musicals, but I would recommend watching it for the effects work in it. It's incredible. Like they'd like have the guy sitting on steps, and then they'd have the other guy like 25 feet behind him sitting on steps that lined up just perfectly in the shot, you know, all that sort of stuff they did in the Lord of the Rings movies and shit.
You can watch it with earmuffs.
Yeah.
And Dorf on golf, you know,
just like that.
So that was 1959. That was his first. And then in 1962, we had Dr. No. Dr. Clay and for No.
No.
As say.
Now, I want to say now, this is how I'm kind of going through each of the movies to do my journey through the Bond, is which I had a better term for. Is that trekking through Trek?
How about bounding?
Bounding through Bond. I like that one. Bounding through Bond. I'm going to have to keep that one for the hashtag.
Right, hashtag Bounding through Bond. All right. Here you go.
But story, I've been reading the books in order. And if there is a movie related to the book, no matter how, if it's, you know, the first one was Casino Royale, so that was easy. But Dr. No is actually the sixth book. It's interesting that they didn't start, you know, like, well, with Casino Royale or
Casino
whatever.
Royale, I think those rights were all, there are all sorts of weird rights issues behind the scenes, because Fleming was essentially just like, oh, you won't make a, no, let's, I'm going to try to do my Ian Fleming. I used to be able to do it. Out, now, head out. You won't, I can't do it. Fuck it. He just like anyone that'd be like, we want to option your rights for a movie. He'd be like, here you go. And so he did that with Casino Royale, and there was a Casino Royale TV movie.
Right. Where he was, yes.
Where like he was like Card Shark Jimmy Bond or whatever. And he was played by an American. And that was how a whole big mess happened with Thunderball, because he started to write a movie with Kevin McClory, and then sort of things sort of stalled for some reason. He's like, well, I'll just take that idea and turn it into a book without getting permission from the other guy. So then they sued, and there was a whole big thing, and then Kevin McClory got the rights to Thunderball, and that was why you got your Never Say Never Again and stuff, and that will just keep popping up throughout the Bond films up until McClory dies, essentially.
Right. But Dr. Inferno, the sixth book, you know, like, it's, that's a big jump from the first one to that.
Yeah.
But he has the fourth book, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, the eighth, and the 11th.
Well, maybe that some of them just weren't that cinematic. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there are titles like James Bond in New York. What are you gonna? You can't turn that into a movie, you know. And they would take titles and include them into some of the movies. Like there was like a short story, Property of a Lady. They put that in like Octopussy and things like that.
Well, Ian Fleming, speaking of, he wasn't even sold on Sean Connery. He said he's not what I envisioned. What I envisioned or whatever.
I used to be able to do, really now, I could do my Ian Fleming, but I can't do it anymore. I haven't done him in a bunch of years. But yeah, he was more of like, I want David Niven to play him.
Right, who did play him in Casino Royale. Right?
The other Casino
Royale. The other Casino Royale, yeah.
Like the other Superman 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was Dana Broccoli who apparently pushed for Sean Connery pretty hard. Wife of Albert Cubby Broccoli, who, of course, produced many of the Bond movies.
Yeah, up until his passing as well.
Mm. And they still, so, the Broccolis still are producing the current James Bond movies.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So, but after he saw Sean Connery, Ian Fleming liked him so much that he wrote sort of Sean Connery's background into the
right, about joining the Navy and stuff,
yeah, and his dad being from I forget the name of that town now in Scotland, but yeah, all, you know, so he decided to add Sean Connery's backstory into James Bond's backstory. So Dr. No from Russia with Love, and then in 1964, Goldfinger, as we were just discussing.
Goldfinger, yeah, and Fleming died, I think, just before Goldfinger came out. Like, he looked like he was 400 years old, but he was like, you know, 27, you know?
He had, you know, that,
everybody used to look like way, way older.
Yeah. He had this estate on Jamaica, right? Do you think he smoked a lot of weed, or he didn't smoke weed?
Maybe he didn't smoke enough weed, yeah.
Yeah. You should have smoked some more.
I know he liked to smoke his cigarettes. That's for sure.
Well, maybe they weren't just cigarettes. Anyways, as Clay pointed out, that is the one I think that not only us, but yeah, a lot of people see that as like sort of the quintessential Bond movie.
It's the one that set up like all the tropes. Yeah. You know, it's got your Q scene, you got your car with gadgets, you've got the girl that you meet that dies. And then you've got the girl that's a bad guy, then she turns to a good guy, and you've got your heavy with the odd job and stuff. So.
Odd job, yeah.
The heavy, yeah.
Your big action set piece at the end with the killer sets by Ken Adam.
Oh, Ken Adam.
Yeah, who also he worked with the Kubrick on fucking Doctor Strangelove. And he had worked on when they were starting to do the Star Trek pre-production stuff, which, you know, that's what the Discovery is based on. Everyone says it's a Macquarie drawing, but it's actually a Ken Adam design.
Very well.
There. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
We'll We're going to end it on Goldfinger.
Well, I think it's important to note that Dr. No was made for $1 million and then became a pretty big hit. And then they were like, okay, we'll make another one. And then From Russia with Love.
One.
Also, like, modest hits. I mean, they weren't like huge blockbusters, but well enough to keep going. And then Goldfinger, that's when Bond mania was ignited.
Did it have anything to do with the fact that a character is named Pussy Galore?
Well, here's something for you about that. Please. All right. There was like concern about that with the producers. They were going to change her to Kitty Galore. And they said, you know what, let's try this thing. Someone at the studio said, let's try this. And so they took a picture of Pushy. What's her name? She just died recently.
Honor too. Blackman.
Thank you. They took a picture of her and like the prince out at some sort of like nightclub partying. And they're like, the prince and the pussy. And they said, if we get away with that, then there you go. And they did. And they left it in the movie.
Nice.
That was the equivalent of them putting up like an Instagram poll to see if it would fly.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, it definitely, definitely worked. I mean, like we said, that's the one. But only a year later, Thunderball in 1965.
All these movies were just coming out like, you know, 62, then 63, you got your other one, 64, you got that one, 65, you get Thunderball. And finally, I think there's a little break between Thunderball and You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, that was 1967.
Yeah.
So they took 2 years. But meanwhile, Sean Connery is also making other movies in between.
Yeah, he did like a Blake Edwards movie or something in there. And
yeah, he did Marnie in 1964 along with Goldfinger. And then he did a movie called The Hill in 1965. I mean, he was all over the place. But so Thunderball, apparently he didn't even want to do this, right? Was that the one? Oh no, that's a different one.
No, so You Only Live Twice. He was
You Only Live Twice. Yeah,
but like at this point, I think the celebrity and the typecasting is beginning to weigh on him. Like after Thunderball, which that Thunderball is sort of a mixed bag. I think it's got some really great lines in it. There's like a part where he's like skeet shooting with the bad guy Largo, and. And he's like, that gun looks more like James Bond says something. He's like, that gun looks more fitting for a woman. And then the bad guy's like, you know a lot about guns, Mr. Bond? He's like, no, I know a lot about women. I think that's a great one.
Well, apparently, Terrence Young, the director of Thunderball, who also directed
Dr. No and
From Russia with Love, he and Sean Connery really got along. He sort of Terrence Young sort of took him under his wing.
Yeah,
in the
he's
early
like,
days.
We're gonna make you into this character. Yeah. You're gonna get these suits, and you're gonna like be in them all the time. You're gonna sleep on them. You want to look as though you are comfortable in them.
Wow.
I don't know if he really slept in them, but that's the story.
But I mean, that probably helped Thunderball too. Like, but yeah, Sean Connery should probably touch on that a little more. He hated by the time, after this, he got so sick of James Bond, he said, I'd like to kill him. He didn't like being recognized in public as James Bond. He didn't want people yelling, hey, there's James Bond, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess his friend, Michael Caine, a.k.a. Alfred.
a.k.a. Hoagie from Jaws the Revenge.
Yeah, he's probably more
known. He said, don't mention it. Don't bring it up. Just run into my buddy Sean. Don't. Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of an interesting. I mean, I guess I get it, but it's also a little.
I guess his thing was when they were in Japan filming You Only Live Twice, he went to use the loo, and then a bunch of like reporters followed him in, and they were like taking pictures. He's like, I can't even take a dump without all these people around me.
And there's not a toilet here; it's just a hole in the ground.
It's
I don't know what to do. Get out of here!
What am I supposed to do with this?
What are these shelves? Why are there 3 shelves? I don't know. Get out of here!
Well, anyway, so You Only Live Twice, 1967. Then
quits.
He takes a little break.
Quits. He's like, I'm done. That's it. No more. And in between 1967 and 1970, when he goes back and does Diamonds Are Forever, he ages about 15 years.
Wow.
He just looks like, whoa, who's this old man, you know?
Oh, I guess all that, maybe that's why he quit. He's like, I'm going to get old really fast doing this.
I think he looked better in Never Say Never Again in 83 than he did in Diamonds Are Forever.
I just came across this poster of Diamonds Are Forever, the painted one with the little Robbie the robot, big claw hands. It's pretty awesome.
The moon buggy. Yeah. And then the Diamonds Are Forever, 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 Forever. Is that on the poster too?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Like the thank you on a convenience store bag. Forever, forever.
Yeah. And Bruce Glover is one of the henchmen in the movie who is Crispin Glover's dad.
Oh, plays, very like, well.
Very, like, they don't come out and say the two henchmen in it are gay, but it's really obvious that they are.
Does okay. that make this canon in the Back to the Future universe? His dad?
I don't think he's George McFly's dad.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure. Just... Why not just...
No, because he gets, like, burned and tossed over the side. So I don't think it counts.
I just pictured exactly what that must have looked like in this movie, and I hope I'm right. Just a wrapped-up mummy on fire.
No, not quite, but... Maybe I'm wrong. I think he actually gets a wedgie and gets, like, thrown over. Or they Melvined me, like in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. It's something like that. I can't remember now. It's been a while since I've watched the movie. And it's one of my least favorite Connery movies.
I do want to mention...
And it's got the guy who plays Blofeld is the guy who's in Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Which one?
The main narrator guy.
Oh, okay. I do want to just say, and I know this isn't the George Lazenby podcast, but you should check out On Her Majesty's Secret Service because it's actually a good movie. And then check out the Becoming Charles Bond documentary Gray. About George Lazenby because
I wish Lazenby had hung around for a couple movies. So it would have been nice to see him do his take and grow into the role. But one and done, Bond.
He didn't even want to do it. Yeah. He didn't even want to do it.
No.
It's good. Weird.
Directed by my old man, Peter.
Yeah, Peter R. Hunt. Yeah. I love that. So, but yeah, I mean that
your old man? You have a lot of dads, dude.
Yeah, I know. I've got at least like three of them.
A lot of dads.
And there are connections to my Japanese dad in You Only Live Twice because a couple of the actresses appear in Godzilla films with Mr. Takarada.
All right.
Specifically in King Kong Escapes.
Anyway, so after Diamonds Are Forever, 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 he gets one of our friend Lee Mansfield thought this was the dumbest movie of all time, Zardoz.
That is
a pretty fun movie to watch.
Explanation. I can't even, like, he's running around dressed like Vampirella, and he's got a ponytail and like this, like not a goatee, but you know, like a Hulk Hogan mustache, and I don't know. He's had I can't even explain it. There's the giant thing shooting guns out.
There's no explanation for that movie except for that it's kind of great. My friend Bass was when I was in college was like, dude, you gotta watch this movie. And we like literally rented it from Blockbuster or something, and I was like, holy shit, that was the perfect art school movie.
Yeah, the Lee Mansfield connection I have with it was our Lee's mutual friend Andy was the one that's like, dude, you have to get. So I got it on Netflix when they'd still mail you out the DVDs. Not as fun to watch it by yourself, though. Gonna say.
No, you have to have some friends over.
A couple of beers.
Exactly. So then he did Murder on the Orient Express, also in 1974. He did some movie called The Terrorist, also in 1974. Jesus, this guy.
Well, he had a deal that if he came back to do Diamonds Are Forever, he then got to make two movies that he wanted to do, you know, that the studio would finance. And I know the Anderson tapes, I think, was one of them.
Yeah, where was that? That was early. Oh, yeah, that was 1971, though. That was like the same year as Diamonds Are Forever, where he played Robert Duke Anderson. He seems like a Duke.
Duke.
Anderson was, would you call Robin and Marion the 1976 film inspiration for Robin Hood Outlaw of the 21st Century?
I mean, I guess I could, although I have to admit, I've never seen that version of
it. So then, no.
No. So,
I don't think I have either. I just stumbled across that one.
He got great reviews, apparently, according to what I've read, but And apparently the chemistry between him and she didn't play Marion. Why am I blanking on her name now?
You're going to have to find it in the budget for a cameo from him in when they make that your comic into a movie.
Sure. I can convince him. Audrey Hepburn. Why couldn't I remember Audrey Hepburn? But anyway, she played Marion, and apparently the chemistry was palpable.
Well, my God.
So they were probably doing it. Then
doing it in the briar.
What do you call it?
In the woods. Right. What do you call that?
The briar. Sherwood. Tuck.
Sherwood. I was like, I just forgot everything I knew about Robin Hood. One second.
I also like the great...
Introduce it to Little Sean.
That's right. Robin Hood and Little Sean. The Great Train Robbery is also very good, I would say. The 1978, he was in that. I would recommend that as well. Another Lee Mansell favorite, Time Bandits, a couple years later.
Oh, I hated that movie.
Yeah. Lee really hated like
the
that movie one.
At the time, Bandit. Maybe if I saw it now, I would like it. I saw it when I was in fourth grade. No, I saw it in fourth in the theater at that. Oh. So, and I didn't know who anyone was in it. And so, you know, I had no idea. So I hated that movie back then. I didn't know who Sean Connery was when I was 9. And I didn't know George Harrison was like one of the people that financed the movie, and there was a bunch of Monty Python stuff. And I had no idea.
It's Terry Gilliam, you know. It's his trilogy of imagination, Terry Gilliam.
Isn't Terry Gilliam a bit of a bigot or something?
No, it wouldn't surprise me these days.
Yeah,
everyone's a jerk.
I would take a big old foot and just squish him if he was.
Go on.
Anyways,
so we're kind of in the middle of Connery's resurgence. He comes back as Bond. And he finally has a real hit again.
Right.
But even that doesn't do as well as the official Eon Bond, Octopussy, that same year. So Roger Moore outgrossed Sean Connery's James Bond.
Wow. Yeah, we should talk a little bit about this. Though we should talk. The Eon Films was all the ones he did previously. The five that he did before were all produced by Eon.
Yeah,
he comes back in 1983 after, you know, all these rights issues and all this crap.
Yeah, and they've been trying to make this movie because the rights reverted back to Kevin McClory after 10 years. So they've been trying to make this movie since the mid-70s.
Wow.
And then every time that they were about to get it off the ground, they'd be like, no, it has to be a remake of Thunderball. You can't have great white sharks with freaking lasers on its head. You know, there was stuff like that.
Freaking lasers.
Like Warhead 2000 and stuff. So they were like, you have to stick within the confines of Thunderball. You know, that's why there's no James Bond gun barrel at the beginning. There's no Bond theme. You know, all the... Some of the
no gun barrel, boo.
Yeah, I know. That's what I say, and that's why in Octopussy, during the score, Cubby Broccoli says to John Barry, he's like, "Use the Bond theme as much as possible." You know, so because we're the official one, you know,
driving
play out the fact that
we're the real paying ones. By the note here. Use it up. Yeah.
So what's going on though? Really, are they mad at Sean Connery for doing this one?
Here's the thing: Connery and Cubby there was bad blood between them because Connery felt that he should have been making more money off of the movies, he should have been receiving a percentage. And Cubby Broccoli was like, "I gave you a fucking career. Without me, you wouldn't be anything. We made you a success, you know?"
Right.
And so Connery was sort of being in a band with someone that's just kind of you know, that no one, Mike Nesmith, being stuck in a band with Mike Nesmith, who always wants more, and you're like, can't you just be happy with what you got? You know, you got everything you could want.
But people were following him into the bathroom and taking pictures of him, and he's like,
so a little bit of that was a big, you know, middle finger to Cubby Broccoli.
I wonder what he made. I have no idea what he would have made for Never Say Never.
I'm sure it was a pretty big payday to get him to come back. And of course, the director of Never Say Never Again was Irving Kirshner,
who did
Empire Strikes Back. And I said to Harrison, I said,
Don't think about it. Just do whatever comes to your mind. I love you. I know. I said that to Sean. I said, don't think about it. Just say Bond, James Bond, you know, just whatever comes to your head.
You know what's weird about Never Say Never Again is like Mr. Bean, isn't it?
Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. That's funny.
He's a real dopey, weird guy.
More Kevin McClory action over here.
So that one was Bond, he almost, first of all, his wife sort of, Sean Connery's wife sort of came up with the joke of the title. Never Say Never Again is the, you know, sort of, because he'd say he would never play Bond again. But yeah, there were problems. There were problems, financial problems. The studio was getting involved. The Fleming estate tried to halt the production. And apparently Sean Connery broke his wrist during production, filming like a scene, and he almost, you know, couldn't finish it. But yeah, they powered through.
And Kim Basinger is in it.
Oh.
And there's a scene where they're on a horse and they fall off the side of a cliff into like the water, and that's like a real horse. That seems sort of animal cruelty.
Oh damn.
Yeah. Different like time. But I watched.
They probably should have known.
Is
better.
This movie yeah. good? I don't remember anything no, about
it's
it.
It's not good. It's really boring. Just watch Thunderball. That's yeah. like half as boring.
Yeah, Thunderball is like a little boring.
Half as boring.
Yeah. The problem with Thunderball.
Hey, if you're bonding like, through Bond, you've got to watch them all. I'm sorry, Clay.
No, I'm gonna. Like it takes me a while to read the books, you know. So like then I'll like.
I find the books to be rather difficult to read. Oh, especially The Spy Who Loved Me.
Okay, there's some stuff in there that like makes me very uncomfortable when they're saying it, but in general, like I do like the old school, like in my mind, it's like 10 degrees of separation, but it's like, I think of like Agent Carter, you know, like old 50s spy stuff. You know, I kind of like it, the word picture that it makes when I read those books is really cool and exciting. I like all the stuff that happens in them, but yeah, I'm bonding through Bond, so. I gotta get through it.
Gotta get through. Never Say Never.
But the racism, I could pass on the racism.
Well, but yeah,
it's not in every book.
But
I guess we could talk a little bit of. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sure.
Go on. No, I'm done.
You know, there's obviously James Bond isn't very. The old ones, especially, aren't too kind to the in the Me Too era.
Yeah, I was gonna say something about that with. Pushy Galore, where she's essentially a lesbian that gets converted over by heterosexual James Bond.
Right, because he's such a man that, yeah,
he can cure her of her lesbianism and her lizardism.
I mean, what can you say, I guess, other than it was a different time?
I guess that's all you can say.
There's probably a lot of jokes in these movies.
There are characters in these movies and books that you're just like, Holly Goodhead, oh my god. Sorry, I thought you said your name was a lot of vagina.
Yeah, like even what's her name, not even as recently as, I keep forgetting the one with Denise Richards.
World Is Not Enough.
The World Is Not Enough. Christmas only comes once a year. It's one of the worst jokes in any movie ever.
They're like, let's name her this just so we can say that joke.
And that was in like the 90s.
That's 1999.
Yeah, they should have probably known better by then. But it's James Bond, so whatever. But if you're going to watch these movies, you know, take all that stuff with a grain of.
You got to keep that in mind, that you're going to run into some of that sort of sexism.
Yeah.
And maybe a little racism. They downplay racism stuff in the movies, although that. Live and Let Die gets a little like Yaphet Kotto as the bad guy in that one.
Mm.
I'm Mosley.
He's pretty good. He's great in everything. But that's it for Connery and Bond, though. He finally, Never Say Never is the last one, except he does come back to do the voice.
A video game.
From Russia with Love video game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in 2005. So that's pretty good. I'm sure they gave him a fat check, so it was easy to just do the voice. But
I wonder what that game is like.
I don't think it did well, as I recall. I remember people being disappointed with. But I suppose that GoldenEye being like the real first-person shooter video game that every other game is compared to, and everybody's like, GoldenEye is so awesome, awesome. So every other James Bond game is going to be lame, apparently, compared to it.
Right. But, you know, he does a lot, I think. But he's also starting to get kind of old. I don't, you know what I mean? He starts to
play. I said, he's like an old man in 1970, so.
Yeah. So in the late 80s and early 90s, he starts to play like the old sort of father figure character. He gets that down pretty good.
You're the man like, now, dog.
Yeah, he's, well, the Dragonheart, right? But Highlander, he start is like sort of the start of his like, I'm the old, you know, geezer.
The wise old, advice. No. Let's call him an elder, not an old man.
All right.
An elder is someone who's respected. Elder is
the preferred term around here.
Yeah,
that's right.
We all, some of us are there, some of us are inching toward being the elder. No, it's all elder relative.
Some of us are racing towards it, not even inching.
An elder is someone that has some wisdom. An old person is just an old person, you know?
They go like, look at that old guy. Why is he still have his blinker on? That's an old ones, person.
They're an elder that don't have anything to offer. But an elder will teach, and they have something to offer.
Right. Well, he had a lot to offer Kevin Costner in The Untouchables because he won. Sean Connery earned Best Supporting Actor. His only Oscar. I love that movie. I do love that movie, too. And without Sean Connery, that is just a sort of a pretty lame gangster movie. But like,
I tried to get Stacy to watch it when we were watching a lot of like Boardwalk Empire and stuff. I was like, you got to watch this. And I think she fell asleep like 5 minutes into it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I tried to get Rachel to watch it, too. Or maybe not tried, but I said, oh, I like this movie. And I watched it a little bit, and I don't think it's not of interest to her. But I love David Mamet. He writes a great script, and Sean Connery.
Say it. Say it like you line. Should say it. Mamet.
Mamet. It's Mamet. Mamet. It's Mamet. Sorry. But like, there are so many lines like that are sort of still famous. He like brings a knife to a gunfight line and stuff like that. I mean, like, it is such a great script, and Sean Connery just brings it to life. In fact, it's kind of funny in a way because there's also a lot of, it's a period piece, but there's a lot of racism in there too. He uses the word WAP, Dago, and stuff like that, which is obviously don't do that, kids. But
all over Godfather and stuff too. I mean, it's just kind of like
can't, you know, just the way they talked back then, I guess. But if you want to make your business see The Untouchables, it's a fun movie. It's got a great cast, and especially
that famous scene with the baby on the carriage and
going down the stairs. But then he does a lot of just like sort of like the Presidio, and I do want to talk about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade for a minute because he plays Harrison Ford's dad,
and they're only 12 years apart.
Yeah, like 10, 12 years. But he is looking pretty old. I mean,
Let's be honest that if you were just, you know, to put Harrison Ford and Sean Connery at the time next to each other, you'd be like, yeah, you totally can see that's his dad.
But did I read this correctly? He was voted the sexiest man alive in 19.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
The same year he plays Harrison Ford's dad. Look,
you don't need to be young. You can be an old man. You can be an elder.
Yeah,
you can Hugh Jackman. You know,
I think Sean Connery is probably older. Well, okay, if he's 90 now, and so in 1989, I guess he was late 60s, right? You know, so he's still older than Hugh Jackman, right? I mean, am I getting my math? Is my math right there?
Did you say 1989 he was sexiest man alive? So in 30 years, you say he would have been 60 then.
Okay, 60. I'm sorry. Yeah. So, okay, Hugh Jackman's clip.
But again, 60 back then, 60 now, it's totally different.
Right.
Sort of like, you know, J-Lo 50 and, you know, someone who was 50 in like the 1970s is just a totally different sort of 50s now.
Right. I mean, J-Lo looks better now than she did. Like,
at 20.
Hugh Jackman, 52 on the age check-o-meter.
Oh, there you go. So... he's still in the prime, though, because in the 90s, he
was in everything
a lot. Yeah, he does not take much time off. I mean, Rising Sun, Good Man in Africa, Just Cause, First Night of the Rock. Medicine Man, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah, my friend Jobless Mike would always be like, I found the cure for cancer and now I've lost it.
That was in one of our trailer tapes.
Yeah.
Video store again.
Directed by John McTiernan.
Trailer tapes.
Yeah, we had
that movie. You'll love this. And that just would show trailers, you know, that looped for endless hours.
I was just thinking about how awesome it would be to have those. They probably have them on YouTube somewhere.
I'm sure they do. These were very particular company that put them out. I wouldn't even know where to look.
Yeah.
Although
just ask the Red Letter Media guys.
The Rock I think it's an interesting case. It came out in 96. It's sort of one of the first, or not the first, but it was one of the big, those Bruckheimer and Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer movies that were just like,
Michael Bay didn't direct that one, did he?
Oh, I don't think so. I think he probably would have been a little young for that. Oh, no, he did. You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I win.
Good job.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you win. That was the one with like Nicolas Cage is, you know, like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And he's killing everybody and whatever.
My main man, Nicolas Ed Cage. Harris.
Yeah, and Ed Harris is like the angry general. His name is General Francis X. Hummel. Like, X. Nobody has that name in real life, but that's okay. It's a movie. You know what? It was a fun movie at the time.
Yeah, I remember being sort of like, this movie's sort of stupid, but I enjoyed the car chase. And it was nice to see San Francisco because I had just visited there the year before.
I don't think it holds up all that well, but hey.
Pretty sure it doesn't.
Yeah, I visited San Francisco around the same time. Actually.
How about
96 or 98.
I was there in 95. They might have been shooting The Rock while I was there, looking at the actual rock itself.
Yeah.
I did go down there and look at it.
Oh, good.
Stacy went. We have like the metal, like the tin cups that they would like break across the cages. The cages. The jail cell. The kids in cages now, but we have these. It says U.S. Or UPS, like United Prison System, Alcatraz, property of, and like she sits and she eats berries out of those prison cups.
And he does the Avengers as well, which we were talking about recently, because it's not Marvel's The Avengers.
Yeah, not so Marvel's The Avengers.
It is awful. Awful, awful, awful. Awful.
Yeah, it's
so
not
awful.
Good because my mom used to, she would be like, well, let's watch this show. It's cool. It's like, The Avengers, like, because she loved a lot of British TV.
The Avengers show also had Honor Blackman in it.
Oh, about
that. At one point. I'm not sure. I don't know if Honor she started. Blackman. It had two Bond women in it, because it also had the woman in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, whose name I'm blanking on. God damn it. She was really good. Like, she was a lovely lady. Sorry, I gotta look it up. And she's like still famous now. She's still doing stuff. She's like in her 70s.
Wow. But of course, 70s is not whatever, you know. 70s now.
Eden Peele's The Avengers. That's, yeah.
Not Keegan Michael Key.
Diana Rigg. Why was that? I don't know why I couldn't remember that.
John Steed and Emma Peele. Steed and Peele.
Yeah. Steed and Peele. Of course, Sean Connery plays Sir August de Winter, and whatever. But it doesn't matter. Don't see it. It stinks.
August de Winter is also like a James Bond sounding like.
It sounds like Roger Moore would have used that as a code name. My name's what was it? August de Winter?
Sir August de Winter. Yeah, it does sound like something Roger Moore would do. I never saw Clay. Told us before we started recording that Entrapment was a good movie.
I've seen it like back in, like, it was on cable when I lived in Connecticut, and I watched at least part of it, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it's a trap.
About it.
It's it's a heist movie, and they had like the lasers, you know, before Mission Impossible did like a cool laser thing where you have to, you know, not touch the
Mission Impossible came out before that. The thing where he hangs down from the ceiling came out in like 96. They think Entrapment came out in like 99.
Okay, you could be right. You could be right.
I don't know.
99. You are right.
Mrs. is always like astounded at the fact that I can remember the year of weird stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that is true. But I just
remember where I was either in school or working at the time, which is why the last 20 years are just a blur to me because I've just been working at home, so I don't know anything anymore.
But I did like this.
You don't have to blame senility.
I think it was more... They stole a art. They stole a piece of art, and you know, I went to art school, and I was just into it. Ving Rhames is in it.
I think it was really the jumping off point for Catherine Zeta-Jones. It sort of made her career. I think is the more what that movie's famous for. I think. Did they like have like what was the deal with them? Because I think Sean Connery, it almost seemed like he had like a thing for her or something. He also presented her with her Oscar because I specifically remember him reading the name Catherine Zeta-Jones at the Academy Awards when she won, not for this movie, a few years later.
Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago. And I think there was even like thinking that that she didn't actually win it and he wanted her to win. So he read her name. I don't know if that's true. There were rumors flying around that he just wanted to give it to her. So he read the name Catherine Zeta-Jones because he liked
it. Give it to her.
But yeah, she's like, I'm with a different old man, Michael Douglas.
you kind of blew my mind when you gave me that that Mission Impossible factoid about when it came out, because that's like a long time, man. Like, they're still making those movies.
They're still making Mission Impossible. Yeah,
and Fallout was good, man. I'm telling you, that was a good movie.
I was gonna watch it. Henry Cavill, like, it's like almost 3 hours long. I don't know.
He can skip to the end and watch the fight with Henry Cavill. It's fucking great. But wow, that guy won't.
Yeah, what
give
was
it up.
Ghost Protocol? Was that the one? That one was good. I haven't seen
2011,
it.
2011, and then Rogue Nation was 2015.
Yeah, I liked Rogue Nation. That one reminded me of a Pierce Brosnan James Bond movie, but just not as over the top. It would have been like a GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies sort of Pierce Brosnan Bond movie.
I mean, maybe we should, since you brought it up, I think we should talk about sort of the James Bond influence on the, there are a lot of spy movies, Bourne and Mission Impossible. I think they all kind of borrow pretty heavily from Bond movies.
Yeah, particularly in the 60s, you could not get away from it. Like everything, like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and like every single movie, like Danger Death Ray.
That was an MST3K one.
Oh, that's my favorite episode of MST3K. I can still watch it and just get so much joy and laughter from it.
Hold on a second here. My cat is going nuts. Keep
it's your
Mystery
cat?
Science I'm Theater stuck. 3000 is what the these guys are. You're just assuming that, you know, people know what that means. I'm just vamping because he's got a cat problem.
Sort of like Blofeld's cat getting away. If you watch in You Only Live Twice, there's a scene where Blofeld is holding his, you know, white cat, and the thing is obviously like, get me the fuck out of here. And it's like scraping, and it's like hysterical looking, and he's just like holding on to it like, no, everything's cool.
I guess, you know, one thing you could Google say search too that. Is like,
are you talking about my cat right now?
No, well, we said you had a cat problem. Then I said the scene in You Only Live Twice where the cat
We talked about the racism and the sexism, but also, like, who knows what happened to that poor horse or this cat?
Yeah. that cat
who
is
knows what the broccoli's, you know, like, rating is with the MSPCA. I'd like to know.
Yeah. They gave some... Gave some money or something. But anyway, yeah, I think it should not be understated. And since Sean Connery is the sort of the quintessential Bond, as much as he hated it, like so many movies have borrowed or paid homage or however you want to describe it to this character. And specifically, I think him as the character even. almost every cool guy or something in a movie, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like, it's pretty insane. And he's also a knight. We should.
Oh, yeah. Like First Knight, whatever that movie was called.
Yeah, First Knight. Exactly.
1995 was First Knight.
I remember recommending that movie when we worked at the video store to someone, not having seen it. And the guy loved it. It might have been Sissons.
He loved everything.
I'm almost a sucker for one of these kind of movies.
I finally watched it and I was like, this movie's awful. Why? How did I recommend this thing? It's so bad.
King Arthur movies. I always recommend
movies sometimes just to get the customer to leave.
Oh, yeah.
I would, if they were like the only person.
I can
person
see
the
both
store.
Of you be like recommending shit like maliciously too. Oh, this is great.
I never did it maliciously.
I just did it based on the trailer. Yeah, if I didn't know it or if I didn't like it, I would just be like, oh, I haven't seen it. Which was actually what we were told to do, so I actually did what I was told to do in that instant.
For a change.
Unless I really hated the movie and I liked the person. I'd be like, oh,
rent the stupids.
Don't waste your money on that.
Richard Gere is Lancelot.
Yeah. So to be specific.
But Sean Connery is a real knight, is what we're saying.
Yeah. He was knighted in the year 2000 for his services. But he was also, so get this, not only was he voted sexiest man alive in 1989, he was voted sexiest man of the century in 1999.
Well.
Wow.
I mean,
it's a lot to live up to.
I know. I mean, I was alive. Why wasn't I voted sexiest man in the century?
Well, you hadn't done 5 Bonds yet. You were only on your second one.
Yeah.
So the math is, in 1989, he was 59. Right? So yeah, you said 60. And then 1999?
Yeah,
69.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're voting it on the whole century. I mean,
when he was Mr. Universe and
right.
We had the Sean Connery cutout from The Rock that with the display at the video store that I took at one of my band's shows at the Middle East. So I have Sean Connery next to me pointing a gun at everybody right behind me during that whole show.
That was yours?
That was mine.
Can you imagine if we still had it?
That would be something.
25 years ago. Then we both had the sexiest cutout of...
I have a little side that sort of ties into that in a weird way that I haven't thought about in like 20 years. But I tried out for this band and I was going to be replacing their drummer. But their drummer and them were still on good terms, but he had fucked up his hand so he couldn't play anymore. And, you know, so they had me like, go meet him over at his place and he can run you through some of the things. And then I walked into his house and he's older than I am. So at the time, I'm in my mid-20s, I guess. So he'd be like 29, 30 or so. And he was living in his parents' house. And then we went into his bedroom and his entire room was just covered in Michelle Pfeiffer stand-ups and cutouts from movies. And that was like the weirdest fucking thing. I was like, it made me think of that Mystery Science Theater where he's like, what's with all the underwear, Servo?
Oh, I collect them. That's like a friend of ours who just buys a lot of weird stuff at yard sales and stuff, but I guess this guy just mostly focuses on Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a lot of Michelle Pfeiffer stuff.
Jeez.
Good for him.
All right, so...
Meow.
I mean, hey, yeah, you could do worse, I guess, than Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah,
I was just like, oh, I felt bad for him, sort of, in a way, you know?
You're like, does this come with the drumming position?
What's that?
Did you have to, like, adopt that to get in the band?
That's why it didn't work out. It was because I was like, I'm not doing this. I got too much of my own crap already. I can't just add a ton of Michelle Pfeiffer stuff to my
I'm kind of more of a Halle Berry kind of Catwoman.
No, man. Halle Berry wasn't even Catwoman at that point. We'll go with Julie Newmar.
Julie Newmar.
No, Eartha Kitt. Let's go with that one.
Hello.
All right, so Upon receiving the American Film Institute's Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006, Sean Connery confirmed he retired from acting.
Yeah, because he had such a shitty experience on The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Maybe he did. I don't know.
What a dumb name.
Yeah, I know. Those idiots. That was 2003. So he'd already been retired a few years. But he also said he would not be in the fourth Indiana Jones film because that one is going to suck. No, that's not what he said. But he said retired.
But he wasn't wrong.
Too damn fun. So, I mean, good for him.
Then you go into Sean Connery's bedroom and it's all Catherine Zeta-Jones cutouts.
That's the joke I was going to make. God damn it.
Son of a.
I should have said it.
But, okay, let's talk about League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That was at a time when I think I might have even seen that movie in the theater, but was just so like... It's like I can never even catch up with. I'll never like see all of the comic book TV shows that are out, like, and be caught up with them or whatever. Like, I'm drowning in that. But back then it was like, oh, this is kind of a comic book thing. I should check it out. And yeah, not very good. Not very good.
He was star of that movie, really.
Very good. And you know that I'm enthusiastic about things.
I do know that, yes.
And you like the Justice League, so I mean.
I'm not the only one.
Well.
At least the Snyder Cut.
Yeah. Hashtag I mean, he's.
United
yeah,
seven.
Maybe that was the one that did him in because, yeah, I don't know. He's also like, he basically, there aren't that many other stars. Like, he's carrying that movie through a lot of the 90s. He was like we said, he was like the older guy and the other person was like the star
elder
Wesley Snipes.
Yeah,
whatever. Yeah, that one, like, you mentioned that one, Rising Sun or whatever. That was right. Not a very good movie either. I saw that one in the theater.
Okay.
That was when I went to see everything, you know, My Father the Hero, Rising Sun.
That was, you know, they were a lot cheaper back then.
Out on a Limb.
You know, I remember seeing a lot of movies when I worked in a theater and I got free passes every month. I just run out and see all these movies that I probably wouldn't bother seeing in the theater today. So,
yeah. Well, first of all, every movie that would come out in the theater today. Well, there are no movies in the theater today.
Well, except today.
What's his face? Christopher Nolan. He's the only one that can.
New Mutants is out.
Yeah, but point being that everything now is just a remake and a superhero movie now. But back then, at least there was a little variety. We got to get to see a thriller, comedy sometimes.
Yeah.
That's true.
Blue Chips with Shaquille O'Neal and Nick Nolte. I mean, how can you go wrong in
1990s? Hey, now. Why not?
Nick Nolte. See, maybe that's why Sean Connery retired. He's like, I don't want to become a crazy old man. Yeah. Even though they portrayed him on Celebrity Jeopardy as such.
Yeah, I never felt that was a real accurate depiction of Connery, but it was a funny one. But I actually preferred Norm MacDonald's Burt Reynolds.
I did too. Was I'll take it. But I mean, the one that Sean Connery was the one that kept coming back because I guess it's The Boys, right? I mean, we have to talk about The Boys. The Sean Connery voice is. It's very distinguished. It's very distinctive. Yeah,
I mean, he doesn't really... he must have been trying to hide his accent in the early Bond movies because you didn't have that thing going on back then. But, yeah, as time went on, he got a little more shushy with his talking.
Yeah, he was like, well, fuck it.
And I guess, like, James Bond didn't technically be Scottish, right? He would be, like, kind of like a British guy, like more of like a Ray Fiennes kind of guy.
Whoa.
I'm just saying.
They should bring Ray Fiennes into the Bond franchise.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. But I mean,
After all, he was in that crappy Avengers movie.
That's right, with Sean Connery. It's another 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing there, if you want. But yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know, I most, even his non-Bond stuff, I mean, a lot of it, like we said, it kind of just like, I think it's very unmemorable. Course,
he did a science fiction movie in the early 80s, Outlander, I think it was, which was essentially like, you know, the Western Outland. Space, you know, Outland.
Outland, it's called, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
from what I saw, it looked kind of cool, but I never actually saw the movie.
There you go. Check it out.
Into that terrible movie Meteor. We did watch that on a bad movie night once, eons ago. The aforementioned Lee Mansfield. And we were like, anything going to happen in this movie? It's just like a meteor slowly tumbling towards the Earth for like 6 hours. Oh, God.
I mean, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm no expert here, but he was offered the role of Gandalf and turned it down, and also the role of the architect in The Matrix, and turned it down. Maybe you guys know why. I don't know why.
I did not know that, but I mean, interesting. Yeah, I mean, he was thinking retirement. I mean, and you know what I mean? Maybe he was like, I don't know.
I don't have to act anymore. I mean, you know, I did everything I wanted to do. I got my Academy Awards. I got my money.
I got James Bond.
Yeah, that's motherfucking James Bond. Right? Like, what else is there in life other than Catherine Zeta-Jones? One thing I don't have.
Fucking Michael Douglas. I have to say, though, like, I watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade recently, and I still think it's a pretty fun movie. I know it's not the best of the – I don't even count the fourth one. But I'm counting the three. But I still think they have good chemistry. I love the banter between him and Harrison Ford in that movie.
They're good together. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's all I got about James Bond. I mean, about Sean Connery. Who is James Bond? I got the voice. I got the Academy Award, and I got, you know, yeah.
One of the things, speaking of the little slip of the tongue there, where Sean Connery is James Bond, that was one of the things he got a little peeved at Cubby Broccoli for the promotional poster for You Only Live Twice, where it's like, Sean Connery is James Bond. He's like, I'm Sean Connery, bitch. Yeah, I'm not nobody. I'm playing James Bond, but I'm not James Bond. Yeah, he was getting real annoyed at typecasting at that point.
But I mean, well, it's kind of funny because they do it all the time.
I mean, if you think about it, even, you know, Chadwick Boseman is Black Panther. Yeah. In a way, right. I think that Hugh Jackman is Wolverine.
Right.
Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. There's certain people that just are the characters. I'm sorry, I can't separate them.
I know, and I guess if you're an actor, you sometimes that's not what you want, you know. And I guess I don't know. I've never lived in that world, so I have no idea. I think some people, like Hugh Jackman, seems to love. Like, he loved it. He was like, anytime, I'll play Wolverine. You need me for one line in first class, I'll do it, you know, whatever. But, yeah,
hey,
I guess
Sean Connery. Don't lose my number. It's under Jackman.
So, I mean, whatever. That's how he felt, and that's how it was.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, I don't know. They probably got him a lot of women, or potentially. I don't know if he ever, you know. Took them up on it, but a lot of women found James Bond.
I don't know. I do know that famous Barbara Walters interview where he talked about smacking a woman around a bit, which is like, don't worry, I don't use a closed fist when I knock my wife around. But yeah, him and his first wife, anyway, she did doubling for some swimming scenes in You Only Live Twice. They had sort of a rocky relationship from what it sounds like. Well, he sounds like a fairly gruff person who does not suffer fools lightly. Yes.
Yeah, fools like Cubby.
I mean, if you
were
James Bond, you know, fuck but the you, interesting, everybody else.
Interesting thing is, him and Roger Moore were also pals. Like, they got along quite well. Like, like people always like to build up the rivalry of the Bonds, and they're like, no, we like each other.
He's like putting his arm around him. He's like, see. Roger Moore is James Bond, too. You're going to put that on the poster.
I think Roger Moore would have been like, yeah, that's fine. I am James Bond. Look, I play him for like 8,000 movies. Probably about 6,000 movies longer than I should have.
I mean, it's kind of funny. Yeah, I mean, because after him, Timothy Dalton only did two. Then Pierce Brosnan did four. So that was
But Timothy Dalton, that's an interesting story there. I can get into that a different time about why he only did two. But well, I'll just tell you right now, it's quick. But he was, you know, he was gonna come back, and they said, and he said, I'll come back for another one. And Cubby Broccoli was like, well, we want to sign you for like six. And he's like, what? He's like, no, I'm not good. It wasn't. It might have been like sign you for another three, but he was just like, no, I'm gonna, I'll do one more, maybe one after that. But like, I can't. I got other stuff. I could, you know, the talk to I the hands the- movie.
Yeah, what was that? What's her name?
Beautician and the Beast. Beautician. And the sequel to Gone with the Wind. I can't be playing James Bond.
I think that, I like to think that maybe the Broccoli just have it. It's like they want to have the name and have it on the poster that says, is James Bond for another six movies. Is James Bond for another six movies.
They have posters made for the next six movies.
Yeah.
Like, I've already got the posters made. I can't change it now.
Like Ed Wood. But I mean, still, I mean, yeah, there have been, I guess no one's done more than Sean Connery, obviously, so that's another
Connery and Roger Moore have done Connery did six official ones and then one unofficial one,
right?
And Roger Moore did seven official ones, so technically they've both done the same amount of James Bond movies. Because now Eon owns the rights to Never Say Never Again, although they still don't count it as canon.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Although Craig is actually the person that's been cast as Bond for the longest amount of years.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
There were 4 years.
He could stick with it and have a Mission Impossible fucking run.
Jesus. Yeah, right?
If they keep putting off No Time to Die, it could be the. I mean, it could be.
Yeah, he could be James Bond for 25 years at this point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's Sean Connery, I guess. I know that he might not have liked as much as we compared him to James Bond, but yeah, that's the way it is.
He probably doesn't even care anymore at this point.
Yeah, I would imagine at 90, he's probably just happy to be. Walking.
Yeah. He even is walking. I don't know. We've seen him in public lately.
True. We haven't seen him in a while.
Hope he's enjoying his retirement.
I hope so.
Does nightly things, like as a K and I, nightly.
Kira Knightley.
I'm sure he does other things nightly. I hope he's writing emails or sliding into Catherine Zeta-Jones DMs on Instagram, maybe.
I do want to say, I guess I want to say one more thing, which I meant to say a few minutes ago. When you talked about he's a gruff, like that was kind of a different, I mean, like that's one thing that some James Bonds haven't really, like, they're a little more cool or a little more suave or whatever, but he was kind of he was a tough guy.
Yeah.
Too, which I think was.
He was a brawler.
Yeah. He did not, so I feel like Daniel Craig has kind of brought back a little bit of that too.
Big Tam.
Channel. Yeah.
Big Tam.
Big Tam.
Tammy.
Tam Dog.
Well, anyway.
Sean Connery is Big Tam.
That's right. He is. And you can't change that one with a different poster.
Nope.
Well,
sexiest Tam alive.
Do you have anything else to add about Sean Connery? Either of you before we. Move on.
Happy belated birthday.
Happy belated birthday. That's true. I'm sure when he hears this, he'll be very happy.
Yeah. I mean, he did. I did speak to him about a week ago, just before his birthday. I told him we'd probably be doing a show about him, and he was happy that people still remember him.
Oh, good. Well, here we go then. Well, yeah. Happy birthday, Big Tam. And that's all I got.
Big Tam.
Check us out on
the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen of Ordinary Gentlemen will return in like they do at the end of each James Bond movie.
That's right.
And whatever we will return,
whatever we're gonna do next,
James Bond related.
It could,
but we'll come back. We'll be back to James Bond, I'm sure.
We'll do some more James Bond podcasts, but we've been meaning to do them. But this has seemed like a good start. Check us out, leaguepodcast.com, or wherever you get your podcasts, really.
Anchor, Spotify.
Yeah. Apple. Apple Podcast. And please
Glink Space.
Huff Duffa.
If you're on Apple, you can leave us 5 stars. We won't mind.
We'll take them, Thurston. We'll take it right off that sidewalk and sell it on Facebook Marketplace if you leave 5 stars around.
5 stars, I'll just take it and sell it. But we appreciate that, and we appreciate listening. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you chumps later.
Sayonara.
Feliz cumpleaños, Big Ten.
Looking for shells?
No, I'm just looking.